If you want to know how the climate is changing near the Arctic Circle, take a seat on the buffalo hide that covers Gordon Van Tiegum's couch.
Yeah, there's a difference. We're seeing it with something called invasive species.
Gordon Van Tiegum is the mayor of Yellowknife in Canada. He's also a hunter. He's noticed more animals drifting north as the weather grows warmer.
We've seen cougar. We have crows. It's just in the last 15 years that we've had magpie, white-tailed deer. So it's all indicative that something's changing.
It's changing around one of the continent's northernmost cities, a 1,200-mile drive north of the border with Montana. Mayor Van Tiegum knows global warming can also affect his city's business climate.
This week, our series Climate Connections with National Geographic is exploring the economy near the top of the world. That includes the industry that sent a glittering stone to Mayor Van Tiegum's city of Yellowknife. It's a diamond, and it's spinning on a kind of lathe. A man cuts the stone, producing a tiny stream of diamond dust. The Arslanian Cutting Works is part of the multi-billion-dollar Canadian diamond industry. If you never heard of that industry, it's because it's grown from nothing in less than two decades. Arslanian's manager, Bob Bees, says some diamonds are imprinted with a microscopic polar bear.
Our diamonds are special because not only are they mined in Canada, they're also manufactured 100% in Canada.
Is part of the value of the branding that you can say what the diamond is not, that it's not from a war zone, for example?
We don't use that because it's a negative.
But it's implied, isn't it?
It's implied, yes.
Canadian diamonds can remind you of little fragments of ice, which is appropriate when you consider how this industry adapted to Canada's weather. The mines get supplies trucked in over the ice. Tom Hofer of the giant Diavik mine says that makes his industry sensitive to the climate.
I grew up here in Yellowknife, and I remember as a child having lots of minus 40 degrees, minus 50 degrees, and nowadays we're lucky if we get any minus 40 in Yellowknife. I say lucky because, of course, as an ice road builder, I want the cold.
He said ice roads. Every winter, mines truck in supplies across a string of frozen lakes. That's the only way to get from Yellowknife to mining camps hundreds of miles away. People in Mayor Van Tiegum's isolated city like to say they have no problem with car theft. Where would you drive?
We're the end of the road.
Right here in Yellowknife, or a little beyond it.
Well, the road actually goes, I think it's 70 kilometers beyond Yellowknife, and then there's a stop sign, and behind that stop sign is a lake. That's the end of the road.
The mayor's right. There's a hand-painted sign out here that says road closed for those who miss the open water directly ahead. Of course, in wintertime, there's more than a foot of ice here, more than enough to drive on. But on one recent winter, the ice wasn't thick enough.
We actually had a very unique winter in 2006.
That's Tom Hofer of the Diavik mine.
We had the warmest winter in the 70 years of records that we have up here. And in all of Canada, actually, it was the area that deviated the most from normal, and it sat right over top of our winter road.
Which opened late and closed early. A mine that might well have put a diamond on your finger was short of supplies for the year. The company had to bring in old Russian military aircraft. It spent millions of dollars on a kind of Berlin airlift for gemstones.
Flying is a very costly proposition. Flying is anywhere from 4 to 8 times more expensive than using a haul truck to drive up there.
Did you say 4 to 8 times more expensive?
4 to 8 times, that's right. So we made the commitment to continue as planned, which meant that we had to fly in millions of pounds of freight.
When people at Diavik or your owners think about your strategy and think about the future, how much does global warming fit into your calculations?
Well, the winter road is recognized as our biggest business risk. And so it is something that we have to realize is on our doorstep.
It's also on the doorstep of Yellowknife, a city where it seems that everybody is in the mining business. Consider a local coffee shop where half the diners seem to be prospectors. Consider the woman pouring coffee. She's among the investors in a project managed by one of her customers. Consider that customer, John Dalton, who hopes he's about to find diamonds.
It's an interesting feeling. It sort of tingles up through your toes.
And consider the local contractors Dalton's company Snowfield hired to pound holes in kimberlite, rock that may contain diamonds. A whole region's economy revolves around projects like this one outside town. So it's worth noting that in 2006, a truck heading for this exploration site broke through thin ice on the Great Slave Lake. It sank. Though the next winter was colder, Mayor Van Tegem says entrepreneurs are promoting alternatives to ice roads.
People are already looking at airships. We've had people here from Britain and the United States that have been working to develop airships.
You mean like the Hindenburg?
They're a little bit beyond that, but yes, same basic concept.
Some companies favor another plan. They're discussing a permanent road on land, not ice. Tom Hofer of Diavik says it would connect mines to a place even farther north, an Arctic seaway. The sea route known as the Northwest Passage used to be known for trapping explorers in ice.
Now, the projections are that sea ice will probably become thinner over time with climate change, so is that going to be tougher to ship up there or easier? Most people think it'll be easier.
Would that take global warming, which is your enemy, and turn it into your friend?
It could.
It could also change northern Canada. Native groups hope the port creates jobs. It could even encourage more mines, like the diamond pit we flew over with a Canadian named Glenn Warner.
Well, you see that open pit down below, down to the lower left there? You can see the great big multi-ton trucks looking tiny at the bottom of the pit, and the road going around on the inside of the Kimberlite pipe getting narrower and narrower as it gets to the bottom.
Glenn Warner owns a tourist lodge on mainland Canada's northern shore. It's at Bathurst Inlet, near where that new port would go, though he doubts it's coming anytime soon. He has trouble believing the world has changed that much. Warner used to be a Canadian Mountie. His patrols took him across the sea routes, where people now speak of sending cargo ships.
I was a corporal in charge of the detachment there in 1963. And I'd go to Bathurst Inlet by dog team in the wintertime and by boat in the summertime.
Now, when you say going by dog team, this is across the water. And in wintertime, the ice was solid enough, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. And it's going to be solid for a long time. Don't buy any shares in the shipping company that's raising money to go through the Arctic without icebreaker support next year. Right.
Maybe not next year. We should stress that a warm winter in northern Canada is still very cold by American standards. But this is one of the most rapidly warming places on Earth. A Canadian climatologist says the region is, in his words, on fire. Businesses want to make sure they don't get burned. Our series continues tomorrow with the drive for Arctic oil. You can see a slideshow of Canadian diamond country at npr.org.